My name is Joe Toscano, and I have a confession to make. I'm addicted to emergency medicine, but I'm in love with urgent care. I've been doing both for almost 30 years, but this isn't about me. Over those years, I've been privileged to work with and meet many of the people and personalities who have formed and shaped the specialty of urgent care medicine. For a long time, many people have felt that their voices and experiences should be made available to anyone and everyone practicing urgentology. Well, now there's a chance to do just that in a series of podcasts that I hope you'll enjoy and learn from. Thank you for listening. It is my privilege and pleasure to interview Dr. Peter Lamelis today. He's a physician, urgent care owner, and entrepreneur in Florida who founded the MD Now Urgent Care brand. He subsequently wooed and wowed investors, and the business grew rapidly and successfully. He continues to be actively involved in the specialty in terms of practice and business. I think you'll find him very entertaining. Well, Peter, thank you for joining me. It's a pleasure to be able to see you and speak with you. It's been a while because of COVID and separated by a country and very little travel these days. It's good to reconnect. So, you know, about the podcast, you're our third personality in urgent care medicine that we're interviewing now. But I think probably some people haven't heard about you. So if you don't mind, as we start, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? How'd you decide to go into medicine? What led you to emergency medicine, finally to urgent care?
I was born in Cuba. I'm Cuban American. We came over to this country when I was 4 years old, fleeing communism. My parents came to this country with nothing. We lost everything in Cuba. And we initially moved to New York City. I grew up in New York City. My dad had businesses. He was a pharmacist in Cuba, but when he came to this country, he couldn't speak English. But he worked hard. He worked for a company, saved up enough money, and then he bought a delicatessen in Corona on Junction Boulevard. I worked at the deli with my brother, Joe, who's a heart surgeon, and my younger brother, who has a business. Eventually, like all good Cubans, migrate down to Florida. So we came down here to Florida and we opened up a restaurant. I worked in my dad's restaurant. We opened up a gas station, convenience store. My brothers and myself all worked in my dad's businesses. So when I had the opportunity to open up an urgent care center, I viewed it like my business, like my store. I'm an entrepreneur at heart. And I think that was instilled in us when we were kids working in all my father's businesses after we got to this great country from Cuba.
So with all those businesses available to you to work in, what made you think about medicine? Did you have physicians in the family, or because your brother, you both of you guys went to med school around the same time, or?
Yeah. We're both physicians. I did emergency. Well, I actually did internal medicine, but I became boarded in emergency medicine. My brother became a cardiovascular and thoracic surgeon. But my dad encouraged us because he always said education is the best thing you could do. They could take your country away from you. They could take everything you have, but they'll never be able to take your education. Mm-hmm. My uncle is a physician, a cardiologist, and my dad pushed us into medicine. And really, I didn't know when I was young what to do. And I really appreciated that because I began to love medicine. And I was a good doctor, maybe not as good a doctor as I am a businessman, but but I thought I was pretty decent.
Yes.
So it was basically my dad. My dad encouraged us, and my uncle was a physician. So both of us went into the healthcare field.
Yeah. Hey, we worked together on the board exam. I can vouch for you're an excellent physician.
Thank you.
So emergency medicine for a long time before urgent care, 15, 20 years, maybe.
And actually, 21 years.
21
I
years.
I worked up in Chicago and then I came down here to Florida and I became the ER director of a hospital. I was in the hospital about 17 years as the ER director before we decided to open an urgent care center. Actually, the decision to open an urgent care center wasn't mine. It was almost made for me. I wanted to open an urgent care center. I wanted to get into business. I wanted to have something that we could call our own. But I had what was called the golden handcuffs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was making just enough money, being happy enough as the director of the emergency department, almost scared to leave that protected environment and go out on my own and borrow money and take on debt and hire people and take a risk. And I was making just enough money. I had what was called, a good friend of mine told me, the golden handcuffs. Mm-hmm. And our seventh hospital administrator, you know, I was a very political animal, and you have to be to be an ER director. And we went through seven administrators. But when I thought I was at my peak, the governor, Jeb Bush, appointed me to the Board of Medicine. I was on the medical, the executive committee. I was the chief of the department. But the seventh hospital administrator came one day, and she released my golden handcuffs.
Oh, no.
She wanted to bring on her ER director from her previous hospital. And politically, at that point in time, I couldn't fight her on it. So I had to step down as the chief. And, you know, when you're a chief, it's hard to be an Indian. It really is. So I had to suck it up, work for my new boss, who I recruited and trained as the director. And I thought to myself, I'm not going to let this happen again. I'm not going to go work in another ER for another group. And then in two or three or four or five or 6 years, be replaced. So now's the time to open up our own business. So my wife and myself took out a mortgage on our house. We found a piece of property. We built a building and we started. I just wanted to do one urgent care, just one. I wanted to make it the best urgent care in the country. I wanted to give personalized service. My wife and myself both have MBAs. I have an MBA. Well, actually, she has two MBAs. She has my MBA and hers, because we went both back to school together to get that.
Yeah.
She worked the front. She trained the staff. She became the head of HR. And I worked the back. And that one little urgent care, you know, was so busy. One day, we saw 175 patients come through our door one day.
Wow.
And I told my wife, we got to open another location. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is crazy. I can't handle this. And she said, well, I thought we only wanted one, mm-hmm. only one. But, you know, it grew from that one center.
You were the only doc working there initially. I know you had told me stories about doing a night shift.
175
in the
people. I actually
175 yourself.
Well, no. Actually, I'm bragging a little bit. I had a nurse practitioner working with me that day. So
okay.
Good, but not that good.
That's a lot of volume.
But what we did is in the beginning, and it was urgent care was a relatively new thing. It reemerged in this country again after a long time. It initially came out in the 70s, and then it went dormant for a while, and then reemerged again. But it was not very popular down here in Florida at the time. We were one of the front runners. There was another big national chain here and us. There was very little competition. And we had a lot of volume come through our doors. We focused on patient satisfaction. We wanted to make sure we gave them. It was groundbreaking at the time. But we're talking 18 years ago, but we had little televisions in each of the room. We had bottled water. We called back all of our patients. We created a lobby that looked like the lobby of a hotel with no little windows, a big open environment. And we focused on really what people see when they come in. They see the waiting room. Shouldn't be called the waiting room. It's a reception area. Try not to make people wait. They see the, but however, you know, they see the beginning, the reception area, the countertops, the halls. And if you have a shoddy facility, you know, people right away, they think you're not practicing medicine well. At that time, there were magazines. Now there's no more magazines. But if you didn't keep your magazines up to date, the patients would think that you're not up to date with your medical literature. So you have to have a beautiful, clean environment, a welcoming environment. And within that, you have to offer patient service, patient satisfaction. We called back every single one of our patients every day. When I was the ER director, I tried to get the nurses to do callbacks, 10%, 5%. You know, they would do it for a few months, and then it would just fall by the wayside. But since I was in charge, and, you know, we wanted to focus on giving the patients, making it a patient-centric experience. And that's why we did very well.
Well, you were successful. Well, I remember I had probably just met you once or twice and heard about the MD Now brand right around that time. But and I remember seeing pictures of your first centers with the granite countertops and paneled walls. It was like the Mayo Clinic of urgent care, really beautiful. And you could just imagine the experience there was colored by that. And then you just provide high quality care in that type of an environment. It's just took off. So it sounds like that early growth was organic. Like you just got so busy, you had to open a second one. At what point did you start to think like really big? Or that was organic growth for a while, but then things exploded. If you could tell our listeners about that, I think that's really exciting.
Well, when I was in the beginning, I didn't want to do multiple centers. I just wanted to do one and make it the best one. And I really enjoyed in the ER. I used to actually save people's lives, really save people's lives, pull them from the jaws of death. They would spit on you. They would punch you. They would threaten to sue you. In the urgent care, we just practiced good medicine and responded to people's needs. And they would, oh, thank you, doctor. You saved my life. They would send us cookies. Little kids would come up and they would draw little pictures and little cards. I mean, it was very gratifying. So I didn't want initially to do 43 locations, which we ended up with 43 locations. We ended up with 1,000 employees and 300 doctors, nurse practitioners, and PAs. I only wanted to have one. But we made it so good. There was such a need for our services. And then I stumbled onto the Urgent Care Association. Initially, it was called NAFAP. Then it became the UCAOA. Now it's the Urgent Care Association. And when I was able to meet with these people and see other similar like-minded individuals across the country doing what they're doing, I realized two things. I realized that we were doing it really, really well, better than some of these other people. And because we were in a basically a blue ocean. There's a book called Blue Ocean Strategy. We didn't know what the Red Sea of shark infested waters were around us. We only saw a little blue ocean. So I didn't know how well we were doing. Second, when I met all these other people all around the country that had 6 urgent cares and 8 urgent cares, I said, boy, if they could do it, we could do it. And it grew, it basically grew. We grew from our success in the first one. So I moved my office from the first center to the second center. I hired staff, and then I moved my office to the third center, in the fourth center, in the fifth center. It wasn't until I think I had seven centers that we finally had a corporate office, centralized office. But I would move and start up each center and then bring in other doctors to work with me. And then move on and open another center.
Mm-hmm. Very hands-on. Can you think of at least one challenge and one joy associated with that growth phase there? I'm sure there's a lot of work and tons of challenges, but what stands out as something that just makes you really happy about it and maybe something that was kind of frustrating?
Well, you know, both of those have to do, there's one answer for both of those. And the answer is people. Yes. People. Mm-hmm. And basically the people that worked for us. It really is a challenge. It's a challenge to hire. It's a challenge to motivate. Mm-hmm. It's a challenge to keep good people. Yeah. And, you know, it's like growing a garden. You plant your seeds and the flowers come up. But every now and then there's some weeds that come up in between. You got to make sure you pick the weeds. You got to pick the weeds and throw them out. I was my wife was the heavy. She was the XO. I was the CO. I was the good cop. She was the bad cop. If they saw her coming, boy, everybody would like, oh, something's wrong here. My wife is coming, the doctor's wife. She's going to fire somebody. But, you know, there was a challenge with staffing the locations. And, you know, honestly, my biggest joy besides the patients and offering good service is the staff that we surrounded ourselves with. We ended up hiring eventually over a period of time, very, very good, loyal people. Mm-hmm. And we had people that started with us. One girl, she is a Mexican-American. She became a medical assistant. She was actually doing a clerkship at our facility. Mm-hmm. And she progressed over those 10 or 15 years with us to be the director, our clinical operations manager. We eventually sold to private equity twice. We did two private equity sales. That little girl got stock options. She would never in her life have imagined that. So we took about 20 of our staff and we changed their lives. We really impacted them for the better. They grew from children to adults. I could be really proud of them. We still stay in touch to this day. They call us, they text us, and we consider them not only friends, but really family. Yeah. So the challenges are people, and the joy really is the people that work for us.
Yeah, phenomenal. That's great. Hey, so in addition to practicing medicine, building a business, one of the other things that I think in my mind you're famous for is being such a strong advocate in politics for emergency medicine and urgent care. A lot of people shy away from that. It's kind of scary. Why do you think that involvement in politics was so important that you dedicated the time you did to it?
You know, a lot of this comes from my history being Cuban American and my family fleeing communism and coming to this great country. We became American citizens, you know, there for the grace of God, we're here. And it comes from that. I don't want to be silenced. In this cancel culture that we have now, in this world, the last thing we need to do is be silenced. If we believe in something, we need to stand up for it. Obviously, you need to use common sense. You know, we're in a highly charged political environment. So if you work for a company, if you're with employees, you know, you have to be moderate in your views as far as that's concerned. But in my private life, especially now that I'm semi-retired, I could be a little bit more vocal in what I believe. And I think it just comes from our background, leaving Cuba and coming to this country and valuing freedom and freedom of speech and liberty. And that's where it comes from. If we don't stand up, especially, by the way, urgent care providers need to be more politically active. Otherwise, other subspecialties are doing it. They're protecting their own interests. So we need to protect our own interest. If you have a clinic, you want to make sure the clinic is successful. You want to be there for your patients. You want to be able to take care of them. And the only way you can do that is have a successful clinic. And nowadays, a lot of these laws and regulations hamper us providing good health care. And we need to push back against that. Lawyers always do it all the time. Lawyers go into politics and lawyers promote themselves. So we as physicians need to do the same thing for the interest of ourselves, our employees, and also our patients.
Well said.
Yeah.
So what's next for you? What can you tell me you're working on without killing me? I can tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
Yeah, and I thought you were going to ask me about the funny story.
Oh.
I want to tell you about that. I was thinking about that.
Yeah, go ahead and fill us in on that. Okay.
Well, we used to have a really light environment in the urgent care center. I mean, it was serious. We used to work, but around April Fool's, it started with day of April Fool's. You got to be careful April Fool's Day. But then the staff starts wising up and they do a day before or a day mm-hmm. after and all kinds of crazy things. Like in the cabinets, they would put a bunch of tennis balls. And when you open your cabinets, they come out, all kinds of, they put goop on the phone. They would call me. I would raise the phone and there'd be goop in my ear.
But
the thing that really took the cake once, we used a test called the Wunderlich test. And it was a personality profile. They give it to the quarterbacks and stuff in the NFL. And it has certain traits that determine success, whether you're introverted or extroverted or whatever. So we were interviewing for a physical therapist. And I always like to do all the provider interviews, no matter how big I was getting myself, at least meet them for a few minutes. So they gave me this Wunderlich test, which was, I looked at the results. It was the best Wunderlich test I could ever have imagined. And we really needed a PT. And I said, oh God, this is great. I can hire this guy sight unseen. This guy is going to be fantastic.
Dream candidate.
There's no way I want to meet him. Mm-hmm. So, on the interview, you know, I had an office with big glass doors and everybody used to be able to see inside. Mm-hmm. This big heavy guy comes in who was bundled up. It was a hot day in Florida and he had a t-shirt, a shirt, a sweater, a jacket. And as the interview progressed, he started perspiring like heavily, really sweating. And then he started taking off items of clothes one at a time. He took off his shirt. Oh, this is real. And he puts a sweaty jacket. Then he takes off his shoes and I can see his fat, knobbly toes over there on the other side of the desk. And the staff starts kind of walking by my office, looking at my office. And then he says, look, I'm a physical therapist. Let me show you how good I am. He gets up all of a sudden, goes behind my chair and starts massaging my neck. He's a fat, sweaty guy who's now down to his undershirt with no shoes on.
Oh, my God.
I'm trying to be patient with him because he had the best test results. His test results are so damn good. And then he starts telling me about his being impaired and his drug use. I'm thinking, oh, I got to get rid of this guy. My staff chipped in. Yeah. They hired an actor. Mm-hmm. He was an actor. They put my IT guy, put a couple hidden cameras in my room. The whole thing was an April Fool's joke.
Wow.
It was, but so that's, you know, I love that the staff, they thought of this way in advance. Mm-hmm. And this was, I don't know if it was before or after April 1st, but it was completely planned out. My wife was in on it. My office managers were in on it. Yeah, it was hysterical. I mean, that's a moment I'll never forget.
That's funny. Well, hey, you kind of avoided the question now. What are you working on now? What's next in your entrepreneurial mind?
Well, as you know, we sold a piece of our company initially to a private equity firm, and I continue to be the CEO and continue to build a company. I hired good people. I hired a great CMO, Dr. Jeff Collins. They sold, the private equity firm did a second sale, and my stock and their stock was pari passu or tied at the hip. So we had to sell our stock, but we did fantastic. Timing was excellent. It was before COVID. We had great multiples, really. Money I would have never have imagined having, life-changing, generational wealth. It leaves me an opportunity to do things. So my wife and myself have been involved with certain charities. We've gotten involved with St. Jude Children's Hospital. We really support them. We're big supporters. We're involved in other conservative charities. One of the things I want to do is do a little more traveling and enjoy my friends and my family as well. I still have a Florida license, and we actually bought a home in Wyoming in Jackson Hole in the mountains. I ended up getting a Wyoming medical license, and I was looking at at an urgent care center down the road in Jackson Hole. But my wife convinced me not to buy that one.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, not to buy that. Mm-hmm. I am doing some investments, mm-hmm. and I'm working with two friends of mine, helping them start a provider network. Mm-hmm. Basically a specialty provider network. So we'll see if that takes off. I think it's got a lot of promising challenges and opportunities, and it would not only be a localized thing, but it could start as a regionalized and grow from that. But we're enjoying life. You know, you have to enjoy life. You have to, especially with COVID now and knowing what happened, you can't just work yourself to death, which is the way to become successful. One of your questions that you gave me ahead of time, the way to become successful and happy at the urgent care. Well, those are two questions. You could become very successful and be very unhappy, or you could be very happy and not successful. It's very difficult doing both, especially in the beginning. You have to be obsessive compulsive about being successful. You have to be driven. After you become successful, you really know when you have to disengage a little bit to work on your happiness. Otherwise, you may never be happy. But my wife and myself are very happy right now. We have some good friends. We're enjoying life. We're traveling. And I'm looking at doing something else. You know, I can't sit still.
I can't wait to hear about all of it. Well, hey, thank you, Peter. You answered my last question spontaneously there, just, you know, based on your experiences, what kind of advice would you give listeners to achieve success and happiness in life? And that's the perfect answer.
Thank you, Joe. You look happy yourself over there. You look pretty happy over there yourself.
I'm very happy. Thank you very much, Peter. Just a quick end note here. Peter mentioned, as did Michael Pond in the last edition, a group called NAFAC, and Michael also mentioned Bill's book, which was an integral part of all that. We'll shed some light on this in an upcoming episode of the Urgentology podcast on the subject of the genesis of the Urgent Care Association.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. Please be on the lookout for more conversations with more of the very interesting people from the past, present, and future of urgent care medicine on the Urgentology podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please email me at jtoscano64@gmail.com. And thank you again for listening.